Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Film, the ones and twos. And Sherry, I'm incredibly excited about our guest today. West Virginia basketball coach, former Bearcats head coach, Bob Huggins, is going to join us here momentarily to talk about a big fundraiser he has coming up in town here in Cincinnati for the Norma May Huggins Endowment for cancer to help West Virginians fight cancer. His mom had died in 2003, back when I was on the I was actually on the UC Bearcats basketball beat for the Cincinnati Post back then, and I remember that. And I know she was a very special lady, and I love that Coach Huggins is continuing her legacy on by raising money. So look forward to talking to him about that and coming back to Cincinnati, and I think it's going
to
be fun.
Back to your sports reporting days.
Early days of my career.
It's hard for me to imagine now because I feel like you've always written PX, but I guess not.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking with Bob. But first, a few minutes here before we have Coach Huggins come on. You have a big piece over the weekend in which you talked about, you took a deep dive into Cincinnati City Hall police settlements over the years. And this was prompted in the wake of the big settlement to Kyle Plush's family. And talk about that a little bit.
I mean, the Kyle Plush settlement was $6 million and a host of reforms, I should say. And it was for the 911 center, but you know, the police department was involved in it too. And it was a reminder, you know, that these civil suits are like accountability for what's going on. And it was like, I was doing like a quick analysis the day that it happened. That's the second highest settlement ever paid out in the city. Roger Owensby was first. But it really made you think about like, what are the other settlements? You hear about them. We write about them as they kind of come along. Some of them, it turns out not all of them. So myself, Kevin Grasha, who covers courts, Cameron Knight covers breaking news for us. We sat down, I want to say together, but you know, from our various homes, and we did a deep dive. And so we looked at, you know, the really like a good set of data isn't like up to the moment. So we went 10 to 2020, 11 years. We went through every police settlement case by case.
48 settlements?
48. 2.5 million.
2.5 million total.
Yes. And honestly, which that is not very high. If you look nationally, the 538, the Marshall Project nationally did kind of like an overview of where the cities fall. We were 27th. So like per capita, not by, so you don't have to worry about the size of the city. It was, you know, it was a fair analysis. And so that was interesting to see. And then we really learned like what's going on, and it highlighted some things. You know, we have something called the Citizens Complaint Authority here, and that's kind of spinning the story forward. Comes out of the collaborative. It's supposed to make police recommendations for the police department to improve policing. And that's kind of like a big fight in City Hall right now. Are they, you know, it needs more investigators. It's kind of like technically fully funded right now by, but because it wasn't for so long, they're super backlogged on cases. I mean, we are a year out from the George Floyd protests, and there's 25 incidents where there was complaints against police officers. And I'm not saying that they're all justified. We don't, the problem is we don't know. Yeah. They're so backlogged over there. Like the number's nuts. Like it's like 2.5 years for them to catch up. So are they going to get more money to fully fund the CCA and look at these things before they become these civil lawsuits? So right. Really just highlighted a lot of things that were going on right now.
That's great stuff. Go back and check that out on Cincinnati.com.
Two files. Read the story. But you know what? We didn't go through all 48 cases, so we could know about them. We want you to know about them. So there's a file. We did a synopsis of every case, where it happened, and what the settlement was. So you can kind of – people can get a snapshot themselves.
And one more point on this, and I think it's the – I don't think it. I know. It's the kind of journalism that we want to do, that's deep dives, the kind of journalism that – we can do if you're a digital subscriber. I know so many of our listeners are. And we're always running deals, cincinnati.com/subscribe, to be able to continue to do this kind of work, to really tell you what all this stuff means around government, politics. We need your support to subscribe, to get a digital subscription. I always encourage people, hey, there's always so many deals. Just give us a shot. And we know our readers love your watchdog work on City Hall and city government. I know that, at least from the feedback, that there's a lot of support for my columns, which, I'm wading in and out of state and local politics. And, you know, the crux of it is holding public officials accountable. And so go check out that subscription. If you don't have one, I just encourage you to check it out. Cincinnati.com/subscribe. And we'll be reading more of your stuff, Sherry. Now, let's shift gears, segue into our special guest, Bob Huggins. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And it's really special to, I'm going to go ahead and say, in the 2.5 years we've been doing this, this has to be my favorite guest to invite on, Coach Bob Huggins. Huggs, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
You are, I understand you're fresh off of shooting a commercial to encourage West Virginians to get vaccinated. And obviously want to talk about your visit to Cincinnati, but how important is that to use your voice to encourage folks to get the vaccination?
Well, I think it's really important. And I think that if we're ever going to get back to normal, whatever normal is, that's going to have to happen. We can't put 14,000 people in a Coliseum and have everybody that close together and risk another epidemic. So I think it's really important. I think it's important for certainly the people of West Virginia and our fans.
You let's talk about you coming to Cincinnati, and I want to talk about your mom and what she meant to you, and you're keeping her legacy alive. And you're coming to Cincinnati, but as folks will listen to this tonight, Monday night, June 14th, the Montgomery Inn in Montgomery 630 to raise money for the Norma Mae Huggins Endowment for cancer research and to fight cancer at the WVU Cancer, West Virginia University. Talk about how important this is for you to be doing this, and the work you have done with that, and the impact that it's making.
Well, it goes back to 2001, 2002, when my mother first contracted cancer, and it was a rough time. It was a rough time for our family. I've got 4 sisters and 2 brothers, and my father at the time, who we just lost about a month ago. So, my mom was in Akron, in the hospital in Akron, and I drove after practice up to see her every night, and then turned around and drove back after spending time with her. And every single time she'd say, "Bobby, don't do this. Those boys need you. They need you to be there. You don't need to be here." And it was every day, and you kind of, "Okay, Mom, whatever." And you walk out of there with tears in your eyes.
Yeah.
And, it was just a rough, rough time, the doctors tell us to go in and say goodbye, and you go in there and say goodbye to the person who means the most to you in the world. And then you walk out, and she lives for 2 more days because she wasn't going to die till it was her 50th wedding anniversary. And died on her 50th wedding anniversary. So, and Cincinnati was great to me. I mean, particularly during that time, the people of Cincinnati, which I'll never forget, were just absolutely fabulous to me. So, when they say something, when something is really bad, then something good happens. And I think the good is the outpouring of concern for not just me, but my family.
Yeah.
From people in Cincinnati.
I saw on the WVU website, as of 2 years ago now, you had raised over $5 million. I assume that's probably way over that now.
Yeah, it is, fortunately. And it's come from people that care and want to make a difference. And I think, the important thing is you can make a difference. You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to give $1 million. I think every little bit adds up and every little bit helps. And I think the awareness thing has been really good.
Yeah.
I did a fish fry my 1 year in Kansas. They had a fish fry that they had generated two endowed scholarships from the fish fry. And they go out and fish all summer and fillet the fish and freeze them. And then after two selected games during the year, they would have a fish fry. And people come down, buy fish sandwiches and whatnot. So
nothing more Midwestern than that.
Well, no. I mean, it's hard to, on my schedule, it's hard to go out there and fish that much. So we call them fish fry, and we do serve fish, but they aren't ones that we caught at a pond somewhere. But it's been great. I mean, it's been absolutely fantastic. And I mean, we've had fish fries where we've made over $100,000. And when you think of the people who have taken their time to come back, Jerry West has been in a couple times. We had College Game Day in here. We had Hot Rod Hundley. We had Rod Thorne. We've had just an unbelievable outpouring of people who want to help. And it's been absolutely terrific. And it just shows you how much people care. And yeah, we're in the process now of, we want to build a cancer hospital here in Morgantown. We don't really have anything in the state that's going to be anywhere near what this is going to be, and make it one of the premier cancer hospitals in the country.
How has Cincinnati been, or Cincinnatians, been really supportive of the endowment?
Yeah, it's kind of I don't know what the correct word is. I want to say amazing, but it's really not when you know the people.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah,
for the fish fry, we have Cincinnati people in for the fish fry, and then of course they stay for the game. And we have a good number of Cincinnatians who come to virtually every home game here. And that's not around the corner. So, they've been great, and they've been great. And Pete Zulia is doing this. Or he's the one really putting it on. And Pete's been, and his family have been absolutely fantastic and very, very giving, and very much for the cause. So yeah, I mean, Cincinnati people have been great. I mean, in every which way.
Yeah. I figured you'd say that.
Nothing but great things to say about those people.
Well, we're lucky here.
Anybody's most of them. There's a few I can say some stuff about, but I won't.
Oh, well, that's usually our favorite part, but we won't put you on the hot seat for that. But we're lucky that we do have such good cancer care here in Cincinnati, but unfortunately, still every place needs that. And so that's amazing.
Well, it is amazing. And it's, as everybody knows, I mean, the best cure of cancer is early detection. And hopefully we can do a great job of that here in this state.
So you are coming to visit. Do you have like a bucket list of Cincinnati things that you need to do while you're here?
No, not really. No, I talk to a bunch of people from Cincinnati regularly, so I'm kind of caught up. Talked to the new basketball coach a time or two, and he's planning on coming to the event. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, the basketball community is fantastic, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
You think about what those guys have done. I mean, when you think about what Vital's done, that's out of this world what he's done.
Yeah.
And raising money. And Mike's been very involved. Krzyzewski's been very involved. And Jim Boeheim and many, many others in the coaching community. So it's an important thing for us.
Do you feel, you talk about Coach Miller here at UC, you know, he's going to be there and you've talked to him a few times. Does that, and do you feel like he's connecting with you more so than any other? And I'm not trying to say like, but is that a connection you haven't had since you left here with the basketball program, or have you continued to kind of have some connections, you know, into the basketball office?
Well, I've never felt like I ever wanted to interfere or you know, anything of that nature. I've come back a couple of times when they've asked me to come back, and that's all. I really felt like Andy Kennedy's last game was my last game.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, people have called and not. People from the university per se, as much as people in the community who were, again, terrific to myself and my family when we lived there. So, you know, when they asked you to come back, I felt like, you know, it was probably the right time to come back, and I still had guys playing pretty much, you know, or you know, guys around the program that were my guys. So,
you know, and knowing you, and it's not about me, like, you know, I was on the UC basketball beat when you were there for a few years in the early 2000s, and I just remember, you know, loyalty is such a huge thing for you, and for you to say the things you're saying, that how Cincinnati has been great to you, that you come back, and that you're at home too in West Virginia. It almost just seems like West Virginia seems like the perfect place for the perfect guy. And you talk about your mom and your love and loyalty to her and what you're doing for her. Like, everything you're saying to me today is like that's Bob. That's quintessential Bob Huggins.
Well, you know, I think if there's any credit to be handed out, I think it goes to my mother. My mother and I were extremely, extremely close. You know, my dad was a basketball coach. I played for my dad.
Yeah.
And not that, you know, my dad and I weren't close, but I didn't have the same kind of bond with my dad as I had with my mom. And, you know, I think there's seven of us. Or as my dad once said to a newspaper guy like you, he said, "How many children do you have, Coach?" He said, "I have two boys and four, or I got three boys and four others." So, but it's, you know, you live your life to try to do the right things, and you know, you don't always do the right things. I certainly haven't always done the right things. I've had my share of misgivings, but. You know, you try to learn from that. You try to grow, and
yeah,
along the way, you try to help as many people as you can.
And man, I love the stories about your mom and dad, and just influential they were in your life, and how blessed, you know, I think you would agree, like, that you were to have them, and the small town values, and your dad, obviously a legendary coach in Eastern Ohio, and condolences to you and your family on his recent passing. And can you share about, you know, you did just talk to about your dad, but you know, what he meant to you, and just in the influence that he's had on your coaching career.
Well, you know, my dad never really, until I started playing for him, he never really coached me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was the first one to say, get out of the house and go do something, you know, but not, he was never overbearing. He was never, I think one time I got him to come out and try to help me with my, it wasn't a jump shot back then. I was too young to know what a jump shot was, but, and he come out and spend time with me, and he never really did it again. And, but playing for him, you know, you learn how much he really knows and what a great coach he really was. But he wasn't, he was never pushy about it. You know, he was, he let me play everything. I played football, basketball, baseball, ran track, the whole deal. Yes. You know, and it was, you know, there was more. You know, when I was, you know, I had pneumonia, I got sick like other kids, and the measles, the mumps, and all that. He never really acted like anything was ever going on. You know, now my mom was different. My mom was there and so much more caring. My dad was just, you know, my dad got me out of the hospital to go play a championship city ball game, and I ended up back in the hospital after the game with pneumonia. But, you know, he was a very Christian guy, and he bought this land to build a camp on, and you know, it's like I always said to him, you know, you bought it, you dreamed it, and I had to do it, but he, you know, there's this just the testimonies from people saying how much that camp meant to him and how much he meant to him and all those kind of things were really overwhelming. I mean, it was crazy to people. And you know, we had a celebration of life, my sister called it. And, and you know, us three boys didn't think it would go over the way it went over. And, you know, we ended up with, God, there was 700-800 people there. So.
Was that in that?
That means he touched a lot of people.
Absolutely. I remember, you know, he would come to the UC games and sit behind the bench, and what was that like for he's a Morgantown native, as are you. You were born there, and your dad was from there, and what was that like for him? I mean, I don't know. Do you remember the conversation or his reaction when it was announced that Bob Huggins was the new basketball coach? Well, shoot, almost 15 years ago, I guess. You've been there 14 seasons at West Virginia University in Morgantown, West Virginia.
Never discussed it.
Yeah, really?
Never discussed it. I mean, now, my mother was different.
Yeah.
From where I'm sitting in a practice facility right now behind the Coliseum, my mother grew up right down the hill. My mother grew up at the bottom of the hill on A Street.
I didn't realize that she had grown up in Morgantown as well.
Born and raised on A Street. My dad grew up in Dug Hill, as they say fondly in particularly southern West Virginia. Back to Holla.
Back in the Holla. My dad was, and all of his family are from southern West Virginia, Cabell County. So I'm well aware of the Hollers. So, this is a question I want to ask you about, and it was a basketball question. Today's game, you were always known as a hard charging, demanding coach, and I'm not asking you to comment on what happened at the University of Cincinnati, but you know, I think there were some of the things we've at least read about John Brannon, which, you know, he's very demanding. And I thought it would be a good question to ask you about how have you had to adjust to, have you made any adjustments to your coaching style to adjust to today's game, today's players, or are you still the same coach that you were back when you were at UC.
Well, I think you mellow over the years. I mean, I've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's just human nature. But I haven't changed. You know, I've always felt like, you know, it's about relationships.
Yeah.
And I'm not a guy who walks out the beginning of practice, blows a whistle and yells and screams for 2 or 3 hours, blows the whistle and walks off and they never see or hear from me again. That's not me. And I think that's what people don't understand. People think, you know, that, you know, you're this demanding and you're this and that and you don't really have a relationship. But I mean, you've been around my guys. My guys
yep.
they are my guys.
That's and, right.
You know, because you take the time to develop relationships, and you're there when they need you. And I think that's the most important thing. They're there when you're needed. And I remember when I first got there, you know, Lou Banks going to trial. And you know, I was told if I went to the trial, I'd be fired. And I said, well, you might as well fire me now, because I'm not ever going to be one of those guys who don't stand behind their guys, particularly when they're right. And so I think from that, I think, you know, because that, you know, those guys were very loyal to Tony and should have been. You know, but I think after that, I think, you know, there was kind of a breakthrough in, you know, this guy is a good guy and he does care about us. And I think that's, if you have that, you know, the other stuff really doesn't matter if they believe in you. And, you know, you call timeout and you know, there's whatever, 20 seconds to go and you draw something up. They better believe in you, and that's how I've always, that's how I live my life. My door's always open, and my door's never shut. Guys walk in and out of here all the time.
Yeah,
I want them to.
And that was the way it was when you were the Bearcats coach. I assume that's probably the way it was when you were the Akron and the Walsh College coach.
Yeah, certainly,
Sherry.
I mean, if we reach the portion of the podcast where you tell all of the stories about Jason,
no.
being a reporter.
No, I do want to ask you, Coach, a couple other things. And I got a couple fun questions to you about West Virginia, but I do want to ask a couple basketball. And your assistant Eric Martin talked to UC about the head coaching job. Is he right on the verge of becoming a head coach?
He'll be a terrific head coach.
Yeah.
He's got great communication skills. Our guys love him. And he has really grown, I think, as a basketball guy. You know, we all, especially when you're as talented as he was, you know, you think you're going to play forever. And then the day comes when you don't, when it's time to say when. And he has really dove into the coaching part of it. He's done a terrific job recruiting. His first day here, I called our business lady that handles travel, and I said, book Eric for New York tomorrow morning on a 6 a.m. flight. He said, 6 a.m.? I said, you're not a player anymore, bro. Get up, and here's where you're going. And I gave him 4 or 5 places to go in New York that weren't close, you know, just so he could see what the business is like.
Yeah.
And I sent him to Mount Vernon. I had a college teammate here, Lowe's Moore, was a great player, played in the NBA for several years, and from Mount Vernon, and still lives in Mount Vernon, New York. And I said, go, we're going to recruit this kid, Kevin Jones. He did a fantastic job. Kevin Jones is one of the best players to ever play here at West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And Eric did a fantastic job recruiting. And they're very close to this day.
Great stuff. And speaking about another one of your former Final Four Bearcats, Nick Van Exel is also a coach, and I know his name's come up a few times for maybe being a Bearcats coach at some point. Do you see Nick being a head coach someday?
Nick had a great understanding how the game was supposed to be played. And I don't know where that came from, but he had a great understanding of how to play and when to make the right pass, when the team needed him to pick them up. Just did a had a great basketball IQ. So, I mean, I think it would stand to reason that he'd end up being a really good coach.
A few years ago, I guess shoot, more than a few, like, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago now, and you know, I know I don't think you said anything publicly about her. Heck, I don't. Maybe you didn't say anything at all. But UC and the Big 12 are flirting with each other, and obviously for our listeners, maybe don't know, West Virginia is a member of the Big 12 conference, and it makes you wonder. Obviously, right now there's no expansion mode, but I think expansion is probably in college sports aren't done yet. What do you think? Should UC be in the Big 12 along with the Mountaineers and the Sooners and the Longhorns? And
well, I think UC being in the Big 12 back then was a pipe dream, because
back when you were coaching there, or?
No, back whenever they were talking about,
okay, yeah,
see what they were trying to get in the league.
Yeah,
it's an incredible football league, and at that time, and I don't mean this in the wrong way, but UC football wasn't very good. And it did nothing to enhance the league from a football perspective. You know, the flip side is West Virginia was the last game of the year away from maybe winning the national championship, or at least playing for the national championship. Totally different deal. And now, you know, since Luke's come in and turned the football program around, it's a totally different deal now.
You know what we're like in Cincinnati, though? We like to dream big, and we're like, we can do this.
Well, yeah, but, you know, at some point in time, reality has to set in. And I don't mean it in a –
I know what you mean.
But, I mean, I can remember we would have practice before the football game. We'd have more people at practice than there was showed up for the football game.
Well, yeah, certainly when you were there. Do you – Now, but now that, and again, this is just from your perspective, and now that Luke Fickell has the Bearcats, I mean, they're most of these preseason magazines are picking them in the top 10. If the Big 12 goes into expansion mode, and I think the TV contract's still got another few years on it, would you?
That's what I said. It's an entirely different deal now than what it was back then.
Would you be someone who says, yes, I want UC in the Big 12?
I don't have a vote.
I got you.
I honestly don't have a vote. That's going to be a president's decision.
Right.
With help from their ADs, but it's going to be a president's decision.
Can you tell I'm like prying here?
Yeah. You're allowed to try. I'm just not allowed to take the bait.
I got a fun question for you. And I've seen photos on Twitter of you out fishing and around West Virginia. And what I tell people about West Virginia, because I got family there, and is that you won't find nicer people, and that it's a state that is incredibly beautiful, and I keep wondering when people are going to discover it, because when you go up there in the mountains and the New River Gorge and whitewater rafting, it is just unbelievable. So I want to ask you, besides West Virginia University, West Virginia basketball, what do you love most about the state of West Virginia?
The people, without a question, the people. Fantastic people.
Yeah.
You know, when you stop and think about, we really, when the conference starts, we pretty much sell this place out, 14,000 people every game. And you're talking people from the Eastern Panhandle. It'd be a lot easier for them to go to a Georgetown game than it would be to come to a West Virginia game.
Yeah, it would. Yep.
You have people in the Northern Panhandle, and then people in Southern West Virginia.
Yep, down in coal country. Yep.
And there are people in the Eastern Panhandle who have not missed a game in like 40 some years. And now,
yeah, that's a trek out there.
Oh. But you have to understand our state, and you talk about hills and going up and down roads. I mean, they're 4-lane roads, but there's a lot of snow over there, a lot of snow, and they brave it. They brave it. They're here. They're not just here. They're here early. Stay the whole game. You know, the people are fantastic. Just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
We just tore the old field house down, and there was guys standing out front. And I was walking in with Rod Thorne, and this guy came over and was so excited to give myself and Rod a brick from the old field house. You know, it's neat. It's just people are fantastic. They love their Mountaineers. You know, we don't have professional sports. We can't go down and watch the Reds or the Bengals, or, you know, I guess we could go watch the Steelers and be the very one of the very few go watch the Pirates. But people here love West Virginia. We tell recruits, and it's the truth. We are the pro team. We're the pro team that this state really doesn't have.
Yeah. Sherry, anything else you want to ask? I would, as a Marshall football fan, I would love to see the Mountaineers and the Herd play in football, but I understand that I understand it. So I'll leave it at that.
Y'all keep dreaming.
I knew you'd have some kind of sharp comment for that.
Well, I tell you what.
In a fun way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've had our few barbs back and forth with each other. I like Danny. I respect Danny. I went to school with Doc. Doc and I ran around together in college.
I didn't realize that. But yeah, Yeah.
From Hurricane.
Hurricane, not Hurricane, Hurricane.
Yeah. So Doc and I were good buddies. I hated to see what happened to him.
Yeah. But yeah, as you know, it was time for a change. And I'm speaking as a fan. I thought it would, but I like Doc a lot. I think he did a lot for the program. And I'll tell you though, Hugs, like there were fans, and I'm sure this doesn't surprise you, but there was a small faction of fans who could never accept him just because of where he went to school, which I thought was really small minded. But you know, that's, you're probably going to find fans like that of any team about different things.
Yeah.
That never bugged me. I'm like,
well, you know, I kind of chuckle when you said, you know, it was about time, you know, that, and I'm sitting here thinking, you know, we think that about people in your profession as well.
Well, as do I.
That it's about it. That it's about time you go. You know?
Well, you know, it was incredibly gracious for you to join today, and I want to make sure, can folks still come out to the event at Montgomery Inn? Is that open to the public to come out and hear you and donate, or do they have to sign up for that? Or
I think they have to sign up.
Okay, we'll get all that information. We'll promote that here when we jump off the phone, and the website to where people can donate and find out more about the endowment and.
That would be fantastic.
Well, you know, I was that's my first time to talk to you since I left the UC beat in 2003 or 04 or something, and I didn't leave with you on the best of terms. And over years, it's had a lot of regrets about, you know, I was a young reporter and I didn't know how to, I had a hard time. Like you were tough to cover. You're intimidating. And I say that respectfully. I just, you know, I lost my cool with you one day and, I've thought through the years to write you a letter and say, I'm sorry. And I can't tell you how many times I've thought of that or call you. And I know you're on to other things. And what do you care about some reporter? But I just wanted to say it means a lot that you came on today. I'm sure when the promoter said, hey, this is who you're going to be talking to, you realize that. And I want to say thanks for joining us.
I don't carry grudges. I generally handle things as they come.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's crazy though. I take the Kansas State job and I go to the press conference and the first guy that I see is a guy who, like you, covered us at Cincinnati. So, you know, y'all are everywhere. You're everywhere.
And that's the thing. You've always been like, and I remember Bill Cook and I always would talk about this. You're very much, you are who you are. Like the way you would treat your players, the way you would treat your family, your friends, people you would meet in, you know, the world of out there promoting basketball and reporters. You were the same guy. And, I always had a lot of respect for that. And, you know, I was just talking to Corey Bliss, who I know, you know, he's a political guy. He does a lot of work here in Ohio. And I know he shot the PSA that you're doing for vaccinations. And he's a huge WVU Mountaineers fan. And, I told him that. I'm like, I told him, I said, I love the guy talking about you. We were texting and you know, those small town values and hard work and your love for your parents and your loyalty to your players and your university. And I just, congratulations on, you know, a great career so far. And it's going to keep going, I think, for a while, right?
I think that, you know, the Lord willing, I think so. I'm comfortable here. I like it here.
Yeah.
I love the people here. The people here are genuine people. And, you know, it's kind of like people used to say about me, I think, you don't have to wonder about what he's thinking. He's going to tell you. And that's the way people here are. So,
yep.
I'm blessed, man. I'm blessed to... Somehow I ended up, I played here and then I got to be a GA here. And fortunately, we had a guy who didn't work as hard as he needed to. So Coach Gardner put me on the road. I got to learn to recruit as a young, really a young guy here. And when Coach Gardner got fired, we all got fired, and I was fortunate enough, Elton Miller hired me at Ohio State, and I was there for a couple of years and learned a lot from Coach Miller. And then I just wanted to be a head coach, so I went to Walsh. Had no idea what I was getting into.
Yeah.
36 people at the first game. I counted them.
Really?
36 people.
Oh, my gosh.
Two brothers of a Brotherhood of Christian Instruction, and they came in wearing their sweaters and open shirt collars. And I walked downstairs. I told Dan Peters and Pete, and I. Pete was my assistant there. He was my assistant at Cincinnati. I loved the guy. And anyways, I said to Pete, I said, you know, we're going to get so damn good, we're going to fill this place, and the brothers are going to come in dressed like brothers. And he laughed and said, "Yeah, okay, sure, right." And you know what? At the end, when we were, well, where were we, 34-1 or 36-1 or whatever we were, they came in dressed appropriately, and the place was packed. So, you know,
amazing.
Things work out.
Absolutely, and I'm glad they worked out for you and all the success. I want to mention this real quick. It's for folks to learn more about the Norman May Huggins Endowment Fund. It's at the WVU Center Cancer Institute. That's wvucancer.org. And if you are moved to give, it's wvucancer.org/give. And then also your event Monday night. And will you be doing other events to raise money throughout? Do you think you'll come back to Cincinnati to do more of these kinds of things?
Well, this one came about because Pete's a West Virginia graduate.
Okay.
And loves West Virginia and really loves and understands the need for the cause that we're representing. So, I people have this notion that I actually plan out what I'm doing, and I don't.
Many a podcast guest will be like, "Yeah, they called us the day before."
I kind of fly by the seat of my pants. I don't get real worked up anymore.
Yeah, you gonna be able to take a vacation this summer?
You know what I've started doing here, just in my old age. I kind of like take them. Like I'll take 3 or 4 days. And I've got a place in Florida that my wife loves on the beach. And so I'll go down there for 3 or 4 days and then I'll come back and, be here for a couple weeks or whatever. Depends. And we got, our guys are back now. They just got back yesterday. So
no more COVID restrictions. And that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was a crazy year. Crazy year.
Well,
hard to understand.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad because I don't recall when you were at UC, at least when I was on the beat, I don't recall you taking time off at all.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I'm glad you're doing that. And,
Kansas was good for me. Kansas was good for me because I went out there and it was entirely different, and people there. There wasn't a single day I was there that somebody in the athletic department didn't walk in the office and say, "Coach, is there anything I could do to help you today?"
Yeah.
And I felt like at Cincinnati most days, those people down there where it says athletic director are sitting down there trying to figure out a way to screw me every day. So it was good for me. I mean, it was really good for me. And it's really changed, I think, my outlook, but I mean, and honest to God's truth is you go in Cincinnati every day wondering what they're going to try to do to you today.
Yeah.
How do I head this off? And it's just a different atmosphere.
But you look back, I mean, the fact you come back here, the fact that you are still connected to basketball, obviously the basketball alums that played for you and the current coach, and I mean – Would you say you look back on your time, your 16 seasons at UC, and say the good outweighs some of those things you were just talking about?
I love Cincinnati. Yeah. There were just a few people who, for whatever reason, I mean, I could tell you stuff that you'd say, "Oh no, nobody would ever even think about trying to do something that stupid."
Yeah,
but they did. I mean, they did. I mean. I get a call. I get a call the day of the game we're playing. Who are we playing? Virginia, I think. And they tell me that Corey wasn't allowed to play. I'm like, what? They wasn't allowed to play.
Corey Blunt. Yep.
He got a ticket. You know how they used to have those festival in the park or whatever, and everybody
party in the park.
Party in the park, whatever. Yeah, drink a beer, whatever. But they gave him a ticket. He didn't pay the ticket, so they said he couldn't play. I'm like, have you lost your mind? And so I got to go. Thank God I had the greatest president in the world, Joe Steger. I went to President Steger. I said, I mean, this can't be. He said, I'll take care of it, which he did. You know, but that kind of stuff happened all the time. But it was so disruptive. Just crazy stuff. Crazy.
But, I mean, does it still bug you?
Does it bug me?
Yeah.
There were people there, and most of them are deceased now anyways, but there were a few people there that I would just as soon never see again.
Yeah.
But not in general, no. No, people were great.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of people in the university were great. You know, it was a good place there, but there were people that were, for whatever reason, I don't know why you would be the way some of those people were. I guess their need to show their power or influence or whatever, but whatever.
You know, all water under the bridge now, and
it's all gone.
Yeah,
it's all gone. I'm at a great place with great people.
Yep.
Try to help you, man. It's a different deal, dude. It's just, I guess what I'm saying is, it's a different deal when you can wake up every day and know you go into your office and somebody is probably going to come in here and say, you know, what can I do to help you today?
Are the reporters nice to you?
Yeah, we have very little. You know, our paper only comes out 3 times a week now.
Yeah.
So we really don't have any. The guy who owns the paper now, Dave Racy. Dave was the beat reporter when I played here.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
How about that?
I don't think Jason and I are on path to own the Inquirer someday, but we're going to keep on reporting.
Maybe I'm one of those people who needs to get out of this business, Coach.
No.
It's worth a try.
Well, this has been great, and just it's great to catch up with you. And again, you know, most important that, you know, just glad you're happy and your health and the work you're doing for, you know, your mom's endowment. And we'll look forward to continuing to, you know, watch the success of that and the impact that it's going to have on, or it's having on so many people's lives in the great state of West Virginia.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. And we're going to continue to fight the fight.
All right. Thanks again to Coach Huggins, and really encourage folks to support his, or if you feel led to do it, to support the Norma Mae Huggins Endowment. And I know Coach Huggins means so much to Cincinnati, and really in so many ways is so Cincinnati. So many years, 16 seasons as the head coach of the Bearcats. And I'll tell you, I don't feel like this town has ever had a real sports personality the way his you know, just this presence of a national presence, the way he, you know, presented while he was here. He really gave Cincinnati a sports identity while he was the coach here at UC. But on to do great things at West Virginia and back home, and it was great to hear from him. Speaking of So Cincinnati, we've reached our So Cincinnati moment of the week, and I have been put up tasked 2 weeks in a row to come up with the So Cincinnati moment of the week. Sherry smiles because I volunteered, and it has to do with cicadas. I'm so tired of hearing about cicadas. I'm tired of reading stories about cicadas. But what has happened in my house is it's a house divided about cicadas, and I'm sure there are lots of households out there. But this is a pretty extreme thing. And honestly, it kind of has me concerned a little bit. What happened, I believe it was last Sunday, my youngest son, 4-year-old, Roman, and I started doing nightly what he's calling cicada hunts. And literally it's just a walk we take out in the neighborhood, and we stop by trees and bushes and we look at cicadas. He picks them up, they crawl on him, they crawl on me, on your hand, then he holds him up to his ear to hear the chirping, and then he you know, throws it up in the air and lets it fly away. Well, couldn't be more opposite. My other son is absolutely freaked out by them, and I 8-year-old, and he is it's pretty bad. He's been going to this camp a couple days a week, and essentially couldn't do the camp because it's outside, and like to a point. So I finally got him to go out on our little cicada hunt last night, and I finally really got to see up close his fear, and I don't understand it. And I don't know. It made me wonder, like, or is there like some kind of cicada phobia? Is Children's Hospital getting calls saying my kid is absolutely freaked out by cicada? It was like he was trembling when we were around cicada. And I'm like, what? I kept very encouraging, like, hey, they won't hurt you. I finally got him to a point where I could be within about 3 or 4 feet of him with holding a cicada in the palm of my hand. And he was looking at it. But it was just, it's very.
You know what, though? They're not tiny.
No.
I mean, I live in Delhi, so they say it's the worst there. But I look around pictures.
That's the worst.
I look at pictures, though, and, you know, various things. And that sometimes I'm like, well, it's not that bad compared to that. But you can see them just circling in the backyard. I work in the guest room, and they hit the window basically like every couple minutes, thud, you know, they're dying.
Yeah.
Kind of remember them being smaller, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they are right there. And, you know, I was driving in. I came in, like, a different route, and I was on North Bend Road. The road was, like, littered with dead cicadas. And, like, they are all around. And so I could see phobias being real because it's a significant presence in our lives.
So let's just hope that, you know, 17, he'll be 25 the next time they come around. Hopefully he'll be okay by then.
That's a lot of therapy for you, but okay.
Anyway, thanks so much for listening. And we know we switched up the schedule this week, but we want to take the opportunity to really catch Coach Huggins and ahead of his event Monday night. So we'll be back on our regular schedule of posting on Wednesday afternoons and then our story on Cincinnati.com on Thursday mornings like we regularly do. But thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week.